our Friday interview. Now, this week it's with a man who has witnessed it firsthand, just what it's like to be locked up in a Greek prison. Like many young people, and quite a few of us will have done this, you finish your exams. And what Andrew Simeou did was he went on holiday with his mates to Greece. Had a great 10 days there. Came back home. And then Greek police knocked on his door and accused him of murder, a crime that he had not committed. What happened? Well, he had to go back to Greece eventually. While Andrew had actually been in Greece, a man had died after a fight in a club. And although it was a club Andrew hadn't been in on the night of the incident, he faced being extradited to stand trial. It's an extraordinary story. The lesson in this story is that using a European arrest warrant, the Greek police were able to force Andrew to return to Zante, despite Andrew pleading his innocence. That was just the beginning of a nightmare for him. I spoke with him and he started by telling me about the holiday.
I was only 18 years old. I'd just finished my A-level exams and I went off to Zante, the Greek island, also known as Zakynthos, with seven of my friends. It's something that everybody can relate to, and so many young people now are almost expected to go on these holidays with their friends as soon as they finish their A-levels. So it's something very normal.
What type of holiday were you expecting to have? Were you going out of your way to mess around? Was it? I remember when I was your age, when I was 18, doing exactly that, going off to Spain to go mad.
Well, no, we didn't go out to go mad. We just went out to have a good time, have fun with our friends. You know, we weren't the kind of kids to go out and start trouble or anything like that. You know, there were loads of girls that we knew from our school and from our area who we knew out there. It was all, in hindsight, it was all very innocent, to be honest with you.
Was it a good holiday?
At the time, I thought it was very good.
And what kind of things did you get up to?
I mean, it was a normal holiday. You know, we were by the pool during the day, by the beach, and in the evenings we were experiencing the nightlife, and that was it. And I bore witness to no violence whatsoever. It was a completely normal holiday.
So nothing happened at all?
Nothing, no.
That you could put your finger on and say, I'm a bit worried here?
No, nothing happened at all. I was completely shocked to hear that. Well, I can explain the whole story. Basically, two friends of mine from school remained on the island for 4 days. So I'd had my holiday. I came back and I had no idea what had happened or anything. And in those 4 days, police officers had turned up at the hotel that I was staying at, where they were staying there too. And they had a collage of photographs of different males. And one of the pictures was of me. And they said to the hotel manager, do you recognize any of these people? He said, yep, I recognize him, pointing at my picture. And said, well, he's gone back to London. His two friends are still here. So the police took my two friends. They took them to the police station, dumped them in two different rooms, turned the lights off, and beat them over a period of 8 hours and forced them to sign something in Greek, which was handwritten, and they couldn't understand. They didn't know what they were signing.
They beat them?
They beat them over a period of 8 hours, yep. It turned out that the statement that they signed said that I was present in the club when a young man was punched around the face who fell from a podium and 2 days later tragically died in hospital from a brain hemorrhage.
And they had accused you of doing what?
They accused me of being the person who punched him.
And but he had fallen off a podium and then subsequently died?
Yes. And I wasn't there at the time. I was in a completely different place. I was probably about 200 metres away in a different nightclub. The picture that they had of me, which was I was identified from, which later came to light, was a disgraceful identification process. That picture was actually taken on the night before the incident had even occurred. So effectively, I was a random person from a photograph taken on the wrong night.
And what was in the confession that your friends had signed?
It said that I was there and I had a fight with this male over a girl, and I punched him around the face. And I mean that was the crust of it.
And they didn't know what they were signing.
No, they didn't know what they were signing. They were beaten and almost forced to agree with what the police were saying to them. But a lot of it was in Greek. Some of it was in English. They didn't know what was going on. They weren't told. exactly what was happening. They kept on asking. I mean, I was present in the coroner's court only 2 years ago. This was after I was acquitted from the crime. I was a witness there. And one of them, Chris Kriaku, said that every time he said, has someone stolen something? Has there been an argument? Has there been a fight? And as soon as someone said, as soon as he said that word fight, the police officer just grabbed him by the neck, smashed him against the wall, kept on slapping him around the face, punching him in the side of the head. And this is an 18-year-old kid in a foreign country. You don't expect to be treated like that by police officers, and you're intimidated, and you're forced to say, don't say you don't know, say yes. You have to say yes. They put something in front of him in Greek. He couldn't speak Greek. He couldn't understand. He signed it.
And so, meanwhile, you're back home. You're back in this country.
Yeah, I was back in London at that stage.
What happened next? When did you find out something was wrong? What was the first thing happened?
They contacted me, of course, to tell me that this had happened, and I told my parents. They said straight away, we need to get some legal advice here because my name is out there, and this person may have been killed. So they took it extremely seriously, and we gained some legal advice, and they said just make statements of your whereabouts on the night that they were interrogated about. So that's what we did, and we forgot about it for a year. So after a year, I went off to university. I continued with my life as normal, and I wasn't too worried because I knew that this is something that I had absolutely nothing to do with. And one day, four Scotland Yard police officers turned up at my door with a European arrest warrant saying maximum 20 years.
What do they say to you when they arrive at the door?
Oh, it's quite hard to even talk about, to be honest with you. They came in and they sat me down and they read me my rights and told me that I was under arrest for the murder of Jonathan Hiles and wanted to take me down to the police station. And it was at that point where my life really felt like, I can't even begin to describe that feeling of just knowing that I hadn't done anything wrong.
Your heart's beating. You're thinking your life's falling apart, presumably.
It's beating now, and this is years later. I think at the time maybe I was quite naive, and I thought, we'll go down to the police station and I'll just tell them I wasn't there. They'll probably just question me, and that's it. And that's what's disgusting about this, is that I was actually never questioned. And it's tragic that this young man passed away abroad and his case was never truly investigated.
So a police force in this country, a British police force, arrest you, bring you down to a police station, presumably put you in a cell.
Yep, they did. They put me in a cell in Edmonton Police Station. And the next morning, I was bailed at Westminster Magistrates Court. And it was at that point where we learnt that the European arrest warrant meant that no evidence would be considered in my extradition appeal. So even though I could prove my innocence, and there was overwhelming evidence of my innocence that I can get into, it wouldn't be considered. So we were almost forced to, we were forced to fight the extradition based on technicalities in the law.
But surely you can't be, sorry to be naive, but I would have thought you can't be extradited from this country unless the British forces, the British police service or the British courts think that there's a fair case that you're guilty.
No, that's not the case anymore. Since 2003, since we signed up to the European arrest warrant, we have almost no power. Well, we actually have no power to review any evidence at all. So we trust the authorities in other countries in Europe, and many of these police officers are very young, they're untrained, and they don't work. This is a fantastic example of how they don't do what they're supposed to do sometimes.
So how much did this spiral? How quickly did this spiral? One minute you're in your home,
yep.
The next minute Scotland Yard are at your door, the next moment, my goodness, my heart's beating for you. The next minute you're in a police cell, a British police cell, then you're being told you're being extradited to a foreign country.
Well, I was actually allowed to appeal my extradition. And as soon as I was bailed, we built a campaign to stop my extradition. What we wanted was a competent investigation. So from the very beginning, we were fighting for my name to be cleared without me having to be sent to Greece. Because if I were to be sent to Greece, it meant that I could be held in prison for up to a year and a half before even seeing a courtroom. And what we actually did was investigated ourselves. So we hired a lawyer in Greece to go to Zante and to retrieve the case file from the investigating magistrate there. And when we had access to this, we saw that the five friends of Jonathan Hiles, who was the victim who tragically died, his five friends who were with him on the night of the attack, I mean, the statements that they signed to the Greek police were, of course, in Greek. We had them translated, and they were all word for word identical, claiming to be taken by the same police by different police officers on different days. And these all said 100% it's the person in the photograph. And they mentioned that he must have shaved his beard off because the person must have been clean shaven. And these same five people came back to the UK and they made statements to the South Wales police for the coroner's inquest. And in those statements that they made there, these are the same witnesses, only one of them had seen it. And himself says that he is not 100% sure or not 100% certain of the attacker's identity. And the other four did not witness the attack. So that in itself can show that there is a huge abuse of process there. And that's just one element of how flawed the investigation is. It later came to light in the coroner's inquest, which was years later, that the identification process was actually a group of traumatized young men sitting in a room looking at a laptop, flicking through photographs and all saying, oh, is it him? Oh, it could be. Oh, is it him? That's not the way to conduct an identification process. It's very, very unsafe.
Now, the scary thing, the terrifying thing about what you've told us so far is that clearly this whole investigation was flawed, but you ended up in a Greek jail, a Greek prison. What was day one like in prison? They walk you through the prison doors. What happened?
Well, I actually spent the first 4 months in a juvenile prison because I hadn't turned 21 yet. So a lot of the inmates were around my age, which was a lot easier to adapt to. It was a stepping stone before being sent to Korydallos, which is a maximum security prison. I think even then it was very, very difficult. Very difficult.
Can you describe it? The first day you entered that adult prison, what did you see around you?
Adult prison as well. Oh God, that must have been the worst day of my life. Just
describe what you saw around you, Andrew.
Korydallos prison. As soon as I walked in, it's just three tiered levels. It's a barred jungle filled with criminals, and it's extremely unhygienic. The first thing I noticed when I walked in is there's stray cats everywhere in Korydallos prison. I don't even know how to describe it. It's just something that I couldn't even imagine seeing in films, to be honest.
Cats everywhere?
Yeah, stray cats, mice. I mean, I lived in a cell with three other men, and this cell could only fit, realistically, it should only be for two fully grown men, and they squeezed four of us in there. It's full of cockroaches, and I'm talking about hundreds of little cockroaches. I wake up and I'm covered in cockroaches. There's a stray cat in my cell. You know, this isn't normal. This isn't what a prison should be. It was terrible. There was a huge heroin scene.
This was a crazy place, Andrew. Tell me about the riot.
The riots lasted for about 2 weeks. I'm talking about over 100 prisoners must have been all beating each other up with table legs, whipping each other with hoses. There was blood all over the floor. I just remember one horrible memory, just seeing an African man on the floor getting whipped, screaming for dear life. And I mean, there were chairs and tables being thrown around and people being beating each other up all over the place. It was very, very dangerous. It was a horrible, horrible thing to witness. I remember standing at the bottom of the stairs and just seeing a man just fall down the stairs in front of me and land in front of my feet. And he wasn't just covered head to toe in blood. He looked like raw meat, this guy.
Sounds like a jungle.
Yeah, it was. It was a jungle. It was a concrete jungle. It was the most horrific thing I've ever witnessed.
I'm interested because we'll walk through this. But when you arrive at that prison, like, what do they do with you? So you walk through. You know, do any of the prison guards try to give you some type of induction process into the prison or how to stay safe? Like, what do they do? Do they Do they give you your prison uniform and say, right, get in there? Or what do they do to you?
No, I don't think... In Greece, there's no prison uniforms because they don't invest enough money into the system. So, I mean, prison uniforms is one thing, but things like toilet paper, necessities like toilet paper, they don't even have. Going into the prison, it's just a matter of signing in almost, and they give you your number and your card, and then that's it. You're left on your own to go and find your wing. And once you found your wing, you know, the guards, they're sitting there, he looks at you, what? I say, well, I'm here to go to prison. And they just send you to your cell, and I remember having to walk through this prison, people staring at me, and it was probably one of the most terrifying things that I've ever had to do.
And being a young man, therefore, in itself, you're vulnerable, because there will be people looking at you thinking, you're young, you're vulnerable.
Yeah, and it's true. And I feel like even as I'm speaking now, I feel like I'm not doing it justice. I feel like I'm downplaying how terrifying and how bad it was. It was awful. I'm struggling to find the words for it. So
did anybody attack you?
What I found more was that people were trying to be nice to you. They have no reason to attack you, but their agendas are completely different. So, for example, one of the guys in there who, you know, I found out he was a hitman, he told me. He ran the whole heroin syndicate in the Gamma Wing that I was in. You know, he was being very, very nice to me, almost too nice to me. And it came to the point where he was offering me heroin almost on a daily basis, making me come into his cell, making me feel like he'll protect me if I ever needed him to. And as a young person in that situation, you're abroad, you're scared, you kind of feel like I have to keep this person at arm's length, but at the same time, I need something like that. I need someone like that. I can't push them away. So what they really try to do is they see the young people, they think, oh, maybe he's got some money, maybe he's young and naive. So they try and get you addicted to heroin. They try to get you as one of their customers. They try to turn you into a drug dealer so that you can go to different cells and deliver their drugs for them so they don't get caught for it.
What were the three other men like in your cell? Were they good to you?
I was in several different cells, from the juvenile prison up until I was in Korydallos prison, the maximum security prison, and also Patras for a while. And I was in several different cells, and every time I moved, it became harder. I think in the juvenile prison, some of the people I met had like this fantastic potential, which I found. And it's not just about how bad things were. It's also about a journey and people that you meet and friendship. It's not just saying, oh, look what happened. This is so corrupt. Look what the government did. They sent me over there. It was awful. The truth is that it really is about ups and downs. So I met some incredible people, too, who definitely inspired me. Someone who could make these incredible electronic appliances out of nothing. He could make a tattoo machine out of pens and wires and a random motor from a fan. He made a slender tone machine out of the seals from coffee cans and a hi-fi. It was incredible. Some other people who could also do these incredible things, amazing footballers, and I thought, these people, what kind of life have they led? If they had the opportunities that I had, this person could be Cristiano Ronaldo, who knows?
What about the psychology behind it? What about your mental state when you are incarcerated through no fault of your own? You were an innocent man.
Yeah.
How were you keeping yourself mentally together?
It was definitely the hardest thing that I had to do, was keep mentally sane. I think the fact that I had such a supportive family who I could speak to on the phone, who could come and visit me, you know, they dropped their lives and they came to Greece, and they moved to Greece almost back and forth. And I think if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have been able to do it, I don't think. They really were my rocks.
Your trial starts.
Yep.
But they had forgotten to summon the witnesses.
Yes, they did. It was meant to be in 2010, and I went to court in Patras, and the judges had actually failed to summon any prosecution witnesses. And because of that, we couldn't go on with the trial.
You refused to let it come on.
That's true, yes. I stood up and said, I want a full trial here. I don't want to have half a trial. And I remember my lawyer even stood up and said, my whole 17 years, of being a criminal lawyer, I've never heard of a defendant who is requesting an adjournment because of the absence of prosecution witnesses. It was unheard of. It just goes to show that I wanted, you know, to clear my name in the fullest way from day one. It's all I ever wanted. So they, so it was adjourned, and I didn't think it would, well, I hoped that it wouldn't be too much longer, and it ended up being another 9 months before it started again. I was released on bail at that point. Okay. I was released on bail. I stood there and I said, it's not my fault that they're not here. I asked as nicely as I could, please let me out of jail. And they did. So I stayed in an apartment at that stage in Athens.
When the trial started properly, how long did it take it to collapse?
I would say after the prosecution, it really started to fall apart. The five friends of Jonathan Hiles actually went to court and claimed that they were 100% sure that I was the attacker. I can't say why they would want to do this. You know, there's people ask me why would they want to do this. I have absolutely no idea. I think it's just emotional pressure and social conformity which led them to do that. But that's what happened, and you know, because they'd made those statements with the South Wales Police that said, you know, I didn't see it. And they never mentioned that the person was clean-shaven. I had a beard at the time. I had a very distinctive goatee, and they described me in the court as having that goatee. But in their statements, it was never mentioned. So the person was clean-shaven. Their excuses were, I didn't mention it because he didn't ask me the question. But they mentioned absolutely everything else, these full descriptions. So I think after that point, it started to fall apart. And then once the, you know, they had the staff members of the rescue nightclub where the incident had happened. And even then, I mean, the staff were only there to protect the club. They stood there and said, you know, there's no raised stages in the clubs. I mean, you can only get away with saying something like this in a Greek court, where it's not an opinion that there were raised stages in that club. It was a fact. You just have to look on the website. You can see the pictures. And the prosecuting lawyer stood up and showed this staff member a photograph of the nightclub and said, how can you explain that these people are raised? They're on a raised stage. How can you explain that? He said, I don't know. And the judge just rolled her eyes. I mean, this is the kind of court that we're dealing with here.
And yet your life was on the line.
And my life was on the line. And these people didn't even know me. I was just a random kid from a photo taken on the wrong night. And that definitely came out in the end.
The story behind this story and what you've been fighting for ever since,
yeah,
is the fact that you can be extradited from this country without being able to appeal a European arrest warrant on that amount of flimsy, farcical evidence.
It doesn't matter if you can prove your innocence, exactly. They can send you over, and if they are to prevent your extradition from happening, there are more technicalities put into place since what happened to me. But at the same time, they still have no power in looking at this evidence. That's what needs to happen. We need to fully safeguard our own people. But at the same time, you know, there are politicians out there. I heard David Cameron himself saying, you know, if there's a terrorist, I want him to be quickly to get him out of this country or to transfer him. And I've also heard things like, if we got rid of the European arrest warrant, this would be a safe haven for criminals. I just feel like, come on, there must be a middle ground. Then we must have an extradition system where we can protect our own citizens and also transfer criminals.
Now that you're back home and you're over this, I'm pretty sure that when you experience something like that, it changes you forever.
For me, if it wasn't for the support of my family, and I don't just mean financial support, I mean emotional support. They dropped their lives and they did absolutely everything to fix this terrible situation. Think about the people out there who don't have that. This could have happened to someone who didn't have family who could be there to support them, were not financially stable, so they couldn't afford a lawyer. This crime would be pinned on them. They'd be sent to Greece within 10 days. They'd be put into prison. They'd have all this evidence against them, which is fabricated based on complete lies for what seems to be no reason, realistically. And they'd be jailed for 20 years. They wouldn't be able to defend themselves. It's disgusting. So what happened to me was the best case scenario. And I spent almost a year in prison over there. And that was the best case. Not everybody has what I have. And I'm fortunate enough to have that, and I'm so grateful for it.
Andrew, my goodness, what an interesting story. And I'm glad you're back home safely, sir.
Thank you so much.